Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today's episode is based on minutes 131 through 135 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. In this set of minutes, Kylo Ren orders every gun to fire on that man, Luke Skywalker, while Poe leads the resistance in strategizing their escape. Meanwhile, Rey's beacon finally picks up on her friends, and she swoops in on the Millennium Falcon. Today, I am joined by Molly Damon from Star Wars Explained and also A Certain Point of View, Schmodown, the trivia after show. Is that right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to talking about this scene with you because, well, it's an awesome scene.
Yes. Thanks for having me. I am excited to talk music.
Yay. I mean, I always like watch your streams on Star Wars Explained and, you know, I always feel like, oh, I want to follow up on so many of the points that you make sometimes. And so today I'll finally get to do that.
Yeah.
So how about we go in chronological order of the scene and then we can, you know, spend extra time where it's needed and then just like kind of talk overall about how we feel about the scene and what's happening and overall what we're hearing in the movie and what it all means, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. So we start with this unbelievable shot. The amber light is behind the walkers and I don't know, I feel like shots like this kind of make me, they feel so grand in scope. They make me really appreciate Star Wars as a cinematic experience.
Yeah. This whole scene, everything on Crait is just really gorgeous. And the use of color on Crait is very intentional, I feel like. I love that the AT-M6s, they're just like so over the top huge.
Which is just, I don't know, it's really speaks to the First Order and their mentality.
Yeah.
And also I love how like animal-like the designs always are in Star Wars. Like here, this shot really looks like a bunch of four-legged creatures, like really big ones. And Kylo's shuttle looks like a little bird hovering right there.
Yeah, and they even go so far as to have one of them kind of like widen its stance.
Yeah.
Like an animal would do when it's about to charge.
Oh, that's interesting because that's sort of what Kylo Ren does later when he does like the most aggressive stance I've ever seen. So here we have a continuation of this like musical cue that started in the last 5 minutes. And it's just this like really repetitive and it's so unusual for John Williams to just stay there on like one chord, outlining a single chord for the whole time. And last week we were talking about how it just makes it feel like you're just waiting for something. You're just like, when is the shoe going to drop? Like you're kind of in suspense because the music just keeps repeating.
Yeah. Yeah. It does build suspense really, really well. Because you're like, wait, are they going to fire on him? And then if so, what's going to happen? And it builds really well to that moment of later finding out that, yeah, Luke's still there.
Totally. And the chord, I just realized. I mean, it's a broken F minor chord. So like each of the notes are played separately, but it's just outlining a minor chord. And it just goes in such a... Like the shape of it almost reminds me of like the Imperial March. It's not like exactly the same, but it's very evocative there. And then the music just stops after Kylo Ren orders all the guns to fire. And they do, which I mean, just brutal.
Yeah. And we get that great moment of just of him being like, more.
Yeah. I mean, I just think of like cat memes there. I can't really help it. But he is, that's like the definition of overkill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really just so, it's so brutal. And Kylo Ren is like really, I mean, not that he's ever super in his right mind, but here he's like totally unhinged. Like, I mean, Kylo's face, and we see his fist clenching too. I mean, even Hux is like, what the hell, man? Like, come on. Yeah.
He's like, do you think you got him?
Oh my God. That part is so funny to me.
Yeah. But I mean, Kylo's whole character in the sequel trilogy is over the top. So him doing this doesn't surprise me at all.
That's true. He is pretty over the top. But here I feel like he is like equal parts aggressive, but also like a child. Like he's a child here in so many. And I feel it was the same way after he and Rey like fought the Praetorian guards. And when he's talking to her and being all like creepy. I feel like that was also a very childlike moment of him like really needing something. And here I really do appreciate how the music kind of lays low, because you can really just focus on all the shot. You cannot really focus on like the sound design there, mm-hmm. like all the explosions and everything. Yeah. And then we also get the catastrophe motif, which is. And let's see. Okay, that's enough. Let's see. Descending power down sound is in my notes. Okay, so here, like, I think what I meant by, like, the childlike thing is, like, when Hux is talking to him, like, Hux is not Kylo's superior, but he sort of starts ordering Kylo around. Like, it doesn't really last long, but mm-hmm. Kylo looks like his face, he looks dejected. Like he looks like he's been really, and especially when he sees that Luke survived, when he sees Luke brush his shoulder off, like the look on Kylo's face is like, he's so triggered by that. He is not okay at all.
Yeah. He spends this entire scene being so completely triggered that like, he doesn't even notice that Luke's got the old lightsaber and that he shouldn't have that. And I remember being in the theater, like the first time I saw this in theater, I immediately was like, wait, that's, how does he have that? I was so confused.
Oh, but yeah,
he's just like blind with, he's just blind with rage. And he doesn't notice that lightsaber, him and Rey had just torn that lightsaber apart.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty dazed when I was watching this too, and I didn't notice, but I mean, in retrospect, I guess apparently ILM was like, you know, cleaning up all of the footprints and making sure that there was no sound that Luke was making. But Kylo is, I mean, he of all people, Kylo should have been the one to notice or at least show the signs that he was noticing. Yeah. But you're right. Like this entire scene, like for their whole showdown, Kylo is just being bested the whole time. And this was supposed to be his time for him to face off against his old master. This was like supposed to be his time. And wow, it just hurts so much that Luke was able to still get the best of him and do it with like that really casual flair. I mean, just so enraging.
Yeah.
So the music does this like, it has these buzzy sounds to it. After Kylo realizes that Luke is still there and sort of the clouds or, you know, whatever those are. I mean, it's not clouds. What is it? Like salt, dust? I'm not really sure. They start to like clear and the music kind of, the strings are kind of going like, and it sounds almost like locusts or something. Mm-hmm. And then we actually hear one of Kylo Ren's themes. Well, okay. In this whole scene, we hear two of Kylo Ren's themes, but we don't hear his main one. We don't hear the dee, 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 dee. We hear his more like hesitant ones. So we first we hear, and that's usually like one where he's hesitating more, and he's not like super in his full power yet. And then we also hear this one, which I think the last time we heard was when he's talking to Snoke, or rather when Snoke is talking to him, you know, goading him. Mm-hmm. Fail. What is it? It's like... You know, that one.
Yeah. That sounds kind of like Snoke toying with him. That music is like, yeah, that's what that sounds like.
Totally. That's like the negative voice in his head being like, you're nothing. Like, you'll never be what your grandfather was. And mm-hmm. plus he's looking at, like, I guess his grandfather's lightsaber. Although, I'm not sure. Does he know that Vader was Anakin?
I'm not sure. I assume he does. But I think he's just obsessed with how powerful in the dark side Vader was, and probably has no interest in what his life was like when he was a good guy. Maybe he used
to. That's very true.
But
yeah, that's true. So then Kylo's like, bring me down to him. Keep the door covered and don't advance until I say. And then Hux is like, Supreme Leader, don't get distracted. Our goal. And then Kylo force pushes him away. And the shuttle pilot is like, right away, sir.
Yeah. And poor Hux, man. He's trying his best. But he's... I love the moment earlier in the film when Kylo's like laying on the floor knocked out and he kind of like reaches for his blast. It's like, you know, that Hux hates him with such a fiery passion that, like, after seeing that and then you see this scene and you're like, oh, Hux, oh boy. What
totally,
a bad day.
Totally. Poor Hux. I mean, I never really thought about it until I started reading the novelizations, but like, it is kind of weird that someone with like no real experience can just be a dark side force user and just sort of like rise in the ranks and order everyone around. I mean, that is pretty weird if you think about it. Like, Kylo's just a young guy who's just was Snoke's protege, I guess. And Hux, like, you know, he's been working his whole life for the rank that he has and everything, and just this kid just can just like force choke and just like randomly act out of rage all over the place, and he has to listen to him. Mm-hmm. That's gotta suck a little bit.
Yeah, he's got that mighty Skywalker blood, and that's all it takes to make him special, and I guess the boss of everyone else. He's like the boss's jerk son who, like, you kind of have to be nice to because he's the boss's son, but he just takes advantage. Right.
That's totally it. Do you think Kylo Ren feels like embarrassed to be in his position at all?
I think probably sometimes he is, especially like if he's talking to Snoke and Snoke kind of like puts him in his place. Because there's a couple of moments where he'll be talking with Snoke and Hux will walk in and he kind of like looks embarrassed, you know?
Yeah. And also he takes a lot of like public humiliation. I mean, I guess they all do, but he thinks he's definitely better than that. I always like to think about the villain's psychology and... You know, if Kylo Ren is a villain in this movie, after Snoke is dead, like by his own hand, who is he answering to? I mean, I know he's, you know, himself is the answer, but is he really, does he really feel strong enough to be a leader? I feel like he doubts himself.
Oh yeah, definitely. Once Snoke is killed in all of this, you can tell he's just kind of like following his emotions for the rest of the movie. And, you know, when things don't go his way with Rey, he just kind of he's like, fine, whatever. Like, I have to get Luke. That's like my one goal for the rest of this time. And that's kind of like him seeing red. That's all he can think about.
Yeah. Cause I mean, he needs to get his validation from somewhere. He's someone who needs to be validated constantly. And so if it's not from Snoke, or if it's not from like beating Luke, it's like at the end when he's trying with Rey one more time, he's just not getting really what he needed from his father. No, I'm just kidding. But maybe not. I'm maybe not kidding. And I just think it's also interesting how his music doesn't really like steal the show too much here. I mean, he feels very at the mercy of everything else that's going on. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Okay. So Kylo's ship lands and Luke is just standing there pretty solid. Looks pretty unfazed. The timpani goes. Kylo's shuttle looks like chocolate to me. Looks like a piece of chocolate that you could just like break off the tall wing.
Oh yeah.
And then we cut to the Resistance. And here we have an exchange between Poe and Finn, where Poe's like, it's Kylo, Luke's facing him alone. And Finn, bless his heart, it's like, we should help him. Let's go. Finn is still not quite, the Resistance leader that he grows in to be. Mm-hmm. And then Poe holds up the trinoculars. What do you think of their relationship in this movie? Or Finn's journey or Poe's journey?
I really like Poe's journey in this movie. Finn, his journey's kind of all over the place. The way that he is like so eager to say like, we got to help him, we got to fight. It's a complete 180 from what he was about to do in the ship when Rose kind of cuts him off. It's kind of strange how quickly he just like flips his attitude. But it's really cool to see Poe, like the wheels kind of turning in his head in this scene. He's like, wait, no, Luke is doing this for a reason. Like, he's doing this to stall so we can get out of here. And I love that.
Do you like Poe as a character?
I do. I like how sassy he is. And I love his relationship with Finn. Like, the bromance there is solid. And
totally. I wish they played it up a little bit more.
I know. There's a lot of missed opportunities between those two.
So many.
But I love how he flips the quote from earlier in the movie here that Holdo says about where the spark that lights the fire. She says earlier to restore something about to restore the Republic, but in this scene he says to burn the First Order down. So I liked how he kind of like takes what Holdo says and puts his own
spin on it. I didn't even notice that. That's a good point. Yeah, because Poe is still Poe at the end of the day. He wants to destroy the First Order, but has a little bit more reserve about how he goes about it now.
He wants a victory.
Yeah, he does. He wants a victory. And he is really taking the mantle here because Leia is sort of like, I mean, she's not done, but in the previous scene before Luke walks in, she's like, she's the one that has given up hope. And here, you know, I would say her hope is probably a little bit restored, but still, like, she's now deferring to Poe.
Yeah.
Quite a passing of the mantle, which, I mean, I feel is symbolic. It's like has a meta meaning for the Star Wars saga as well. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. All right. So Poe holds up the trinoculars, which, you know, helps us cut then to what he's seeing. So apparently that's just a Super 8 camera that he's holding up.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what it looks like.
which is really
sideways.
But yes, the trinoculars, sure. So then we cut back to Luke and Kylo facing off outside, and we have this string tremolo. So it's like a, like kind of just like a more buzzy stuff. Mm-hmm. And we get this descending cello line. That's like this minor thing, like do, 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 do. And then again, we get back to quiet. Like, I feel like there's a lot of strong music in this scene, but also moments of laying low and really letting the dialogue and, you know, things like the lightsabers later and everything really stand out. So Kylo's like, did you come back to forgive, to say you forgive me, to save my soul? And Luke's like, no.
Yeah, I love all the intentional kind of quiet moments in this scene, because the music does such a good job at building anticipation and kind of like making you nervous for what's about to happen, that it sets their conversation up really nicely.
Yeah, the anticipation is a good word for it. Like, it's sort of a continual, like, I'm actually surprised how long they dragged this scene out, this whole setting, because I mean, really not that, I can see this going in a number of other ways. I mean, really, it's just the two of them standing off, and they're going to have a very brief fight, and that's going to be it. And somehow that's sort of like the whole end of the battle. That's, you know, while the resistance just escapes. But it's really a testament to like the cinematography and the space, the sound design, and I would say the acting is like really top notch here too. You know, for how long they dragged that out, like those shots. I mean, Star Wars does a lot of Western stuff, and this is no exception. It really extends that scene.
Yeah, it makes it feel very much like larger than life, because the camera angles from down low. So you're seeing Kylo with his cape and, you know, his very dramatic stance and everything. And you're seeing all of that from like a very low perspective, which just makes everything seem bigger. And then, yeah, we get a couple of really good just horizon shots of like the two of them on the same level.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, they are like on the same, literally the same level in a lot of those shots. And it's such an expansive like scene, like place, location that they're on, that they're at, I don't know. And they are the main people in the shot. Like, it's sparse. Like, they're in a very grand, big place, and they're just two people in it. Like, they're relatively small, but their presence takes up that whole space.
Yeah. And it's cool to see them go back and forth between just the two of them on the same level. And then every shot on Kylo, you can see like the AT-M6 is in the background, and he's like kind of very boisterous in his shots, because he's like, look, I mean, I've got this huge army with me, and you're nothing.
Yeah. So, like, Kylo needs all of his backup with him.
Yes.
And Luke obviously doesn't. Like, Luke is the backup for a bigger cause. And I feel like, I wonder if someone's done a put different music to this, because I can see this being like sort of a fashion show or something. The way that Kylo like lets his cloak slide off.
Yeah.
And I mean, that part is, it's really intense, and it's like pretty chilling, but it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. It just slides off so dramatically. Like, you know, he designed the cloak to be able to do that.
Right, right. He's all about the drama. And yeah, this for him is like very ritualistic. He's like, I'm going to take my cloak off. It's very premeditated. I'm going to take my cloak off. I'm going to do my power stance. I'm going to take my lightsaber out. Like, just nothing, exuding nothing but confidence and, you know, like, I'm in charge. because he has to do that in order to feel validated.
That's very true. Yeah. You're right. The ritual is so much a part of it. And just the display of it, like the peacocking here, mm-hmm. the intimidation, hopefully doesn't work, but you know, the intimidation. I really love the aggressive stance he gets into. And his lightsaber ignites, and it is just such a powerful sound. It's so raw. And Luke's lightsaber, or, you know, Anakin's lightsaber, we get to hear sort of them face off, like the two different lightsaber sounds. Like they're both very high in the sound mix. So we hear both of the lightsabers like very pronounced, and they're both have really powerful, but really different sounds. Mm-hmm. What do you think of their, like, did you pick up on that? And do you have thoughts about their lightsabers?
I mean, yeah, Kylo Ren's lightsaber is so cool. And just the sound of it is so guttural for a lightsaber. It's very low. It's kind of lower of a tone, I guess. But then you hear it compared to Luke's lightsaber, and it's very high pitched and sharp when it goes on. Mm. So I love the difference in those sounds.
Yeah, and I like hearing them side by side, because you can like really hear the differences and how I feel like Kylo's sounds more stabby. Like you can hear mm-hmm. individual, like you can hear the aggression in it. It's sort of like a motorcycle revving up, and Anakin's, or you know, Luke's has more of that hum. It's like more constant. It's more steady.
Yeah. And that's all because of how the lightsaber crystals are, and like, because Kylo's is cracked, like it's like such a huge metaphor for just who he is as a person. He is cracked and flawed, just like how he kind of bled this crystal to be.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. I mean, it's like this whole, I mean, Star Wars in general, and especially this scene is no exception. Like everything I feel like is just symbolic of the next thing. Like everything is, you can view it as like one big allegory. Like everything about them is, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the lightsabers and the music and everything.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Exactly. Exactly. So then we cut back to the Resistance base, and Poe's, you know, he continues, and we actually hear Poe's theme here, which is rare. It's super rare. I did not know Poe had a theme until like way later.
Yeah.
So it goes like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And we barely hear it. I'm frequently confused as to like the usage of this theme in general. I feel like I feel like Poe often is just associated with like the Resistance March.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it is nice that we hear his theme in an instance where he's stepping into leadership.
Yeah. And taking a little extra time to actually think things through. And it's adorable to literally see the wheels turning in his head. Like, okay, yes. Use your head.
Yeah. I mean, he learned, and that's, you know, that's wonderful. I personally, yeah. I do not like Poe, the character, at the beginning of this movie. And by the end, he grows on me. And mm-hmm. Although my gripe is that he's mean to C-3PO.
That's true. And C-3PO is just trying to help, as always.
Always. As always. Nothing's ever his fault. He's just trying his best, literally. So he's like, sir, is it possible? Blah, blah, blah. The odds of whatever. And Poe's like, shut up.
Yeah. 15,428 to one. It's like, I'm going to get my odds in to this movie. Dang it.
Yep. So, yes, we're still not, we haven't progressed enough to be nice to 3PO yet. But good on you, 3PO. The audience needed to know that, I'm sure. So then Finn's like, "Where did the crystal critters go?" And we hear those beautiful vulptices. Such a beautiful, beautiful sound, beautiful little chimes. And I feel like the way that they look really matches the way that they sound. It's very satisfying.
I love the little crystal critters. And I it's funny because through my Schmodown studying, I know that that is Finn's last line of the film. And
Oh.
it's so strange that that's the last thing we hear him say out loud.
Whoa.
Like
That
he's
is
in
weird.
several other shots, but that is his last speaking line.
Whoa, that is really weird. That's funny. I mean, great line to go out on, though. What can I say? Where'd the crystal critters go? And this is when Leia like is actually like, "What are you looking at me for? Follow him." So, and him it equals Poe. And here, Leia's smile here is just like everything to me. Like the smile she gives is very like, I trained him well. And I don't know. I love Leia. I love Leia so much.
Yeah, I love her conversation with Holdo earlier in the film about like how they both love Poe because he's, he's Poe. But yeah,
And
she has the very proud look on her face, like, okay, my job here is done with Poe, like taught him how to use his brain.
And she is like, she respects him. It's not just like she and Holdo, I feel like, weren't just trying to like rag on it, like just to take him down. Like, I feel like they really valued his personality and his leadership and thought that he had something special. And so they wanted to shape him into something. Which is interesting because, like, Leia, I mean, as of this film, I don't think we knew the extent to which she had been trained as a Jedi, but she really has her own, she is her own, she's a mentor just as much as, a Jedi master is with like apprentices or with students or whatever, Padawans. Like she and Holdo both, like they both have their next generation that they've been training.
Yeah, I mean she's a general. Like she's taking her leadership role very seriously.
I love that, like, Rian Johnson credits his editor, Bob Duse, for catching that shot of Leia smiling. And I mean, I saw this in the director's commentary of The Last Jedi. And I mean, I just love hearing the creators of big projects shout out the other members of their team that added different elements, because it's a good reminder that these things are made by a group effort, and like a bunch of different people add their talent to the final thing. And so Rian Johnson fully credits him for that. He says it's an example of how a good editor can really sculpt a moment and perfectly play it. Because I guess Bob Doucet was like, "We got to go back and like get a shot of her smiling like that." And so I think that was very well said. Sculpt a moment. Yes, that moment has been sculpted. Then we get a hint of March of the Resistance, just like the do, 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 do. And so we're really starting to feel with the music that the resistance, our resistance heroes are starting to ramp up, and they're starting to kind of crystallize a plan, or they're at least not just huddled listening to like machine gun sounds. They're not just like huddled there like, oh crap. Like now they're starting to make some moves, which is perfect timing because Rey flies in. And we hear music, Rey music.
Yay, I love Ray's theme so much.
Do you have a favorite one of her themes?
I mean,
well,
I would have to listen to them each separately, but.
Well, here we hear two of them. So first we hear the, that's like the chimes theme.
Yeah.
And then we hear the dee, 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 dee. So I would say if she has three themes as of this movie, they would be, the first one would be like, and then the second one would be the, and then the third one would be like the more lyrical one. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of those themes with like, do you, okay. I didn't, a lot of people this season have mentioned that they associate different of Rey's themes with different parts of her in the films. And yeah, what do you think?
I think my favorite of those three would be the second one, because I just have a very vivid memory attached to that particular theme of her at the beginning of the movie, kind of like sliding down that hill in the sand. And it's, yeah, that music is so gorgeous. And then the third one feels more like her, like Rey's connection to the Force.
I like that.
Yeah,
that's so true, because that is like, that's the one that we hear when she is on Octo swinging the lightsaber, practicing all the moves. And that's also what we hear when she's fighting the Praetorian guards. And I always thought of that as like Rey in her full power, like Rey is when she's actualized, like mm-hmm. she gets this, but Rey's connection to the Force like describes it perfectly.
Or like when she's just feeling very in tune with herself.
Yeah, in tune with herself. That's so true. Yeah. Okay. I like that. And that is what we hear after, actually we hear, that's when, okay, let's see. When does that kick in? So we hear the first one, we hear the dee, 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 dee first, which is when she's like, they've got to be somewhere. Keep scanning for life forms. And then, when she says, I see them, Chewie, there, that's when we get the in tune one. So that makes perfect. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like her power pose theme. And that's basically where this set of 5 minutes ends. It ends with Rey coming in. Actually, it ends with Poe going, no, 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 no. But that leads to the next part. What do you think of, how did you feel about this film in the first time you saw it? Like before reading anything on the internet?
I loved it. I thought, like, my very first reaction to this film was just, I was gushing over it when we came out of the theater. And it was so different to Alex's reaction, because he was very like, I have to think about this. Like, I don't know how to feel right now. And I was just like, that was perfect. Everything that happened was so good. And I don't know. We had very different reactions to this. But I've loved it since the first time I saw it. And my appreciation for it grows every time I watch it.
I share that as well. I mean, I really, really loved it the first time I saw it. But I also didn't want to talk to anyone about it. So, because I also just wanted to spend more time on my own digesting it. Mm-hmm. I loved it, but I also, like, I always watch Star Wars movies by myself and refuse to comment on it until like a month has passed, because I don't like getting caught up in the internet, basically.
Yeah.
And that's
great.
So, yeah. Like, I mean, that's y'all's job. So
yeah, it's unfortunate that we, you know, have to break down trailers and like make videos like as soon as we see something, because you know our opinions evolve and change and stuff that we do like or don't like can change, you know, so it takes a couple of viewings to really form a solid opinion on like Star Wars things. But yeah, having to like sit and break it down right after the first viewing is rough.
But... Did you all do that on Star Wars Explained, like right after it came out?
Yeah.
Damn.
And it's like, so in a way we can't really enjoy the movie on first viewing, but like second, third, fourth viewing, those are the ones that we're kind of watching it more for enjoyment, which it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's we're just filled with excitement either way.
yeah, it's, I mean, and you, okay, so you do like you actually do like trivia contests, so you study these things like with a fine-tooth comb that most people never would. Do you find that deepens your appreciation for them, or does it make you feel sort of separated from the content?
A little bit of both, because we do watch these movies so closely with the, you know, subtitles on, pausing it every other minute to write something down. That can be very tedious, and by the end of the movie you're just exhausted. So I am always really happy when I can just watch a Star Wars, like without taking notes, without being like, oh, what was that number that C-3PO just said? Let me make sure that I can remember that. And like thinking
like
of
the odds.
Thinking of things that are quotable that someone could say, like who said this line. And so that can be kind of tough, but I think for like the prequels, for instance, my appreciation for those went up significantly when I started watching these movies to study them for trivia, just because I guess I didn't watch them a ton when I was growing up. You know, I saw them when they came out and didn't really pay much attention to them for a long time. And then when I started studying for Schmodown stuff, my appreciation definitely grew for the prequels.
Interesting. I've always loved the prequels, but I find that, I've never studied them to that extent. The thing with a lot of Star Wars content is, as more content is made, it sort of deepens the old content. So,
yeah.
Clone Wars and all of that stuff. But so musically speaking, or sound design speaking, what tends to like perk your ear up? Like, what are the sorts of things that you might notice your first viewing? And what are some of the things you might finally notice like on your 10th viewing or after studying?
I'm pretty terrible at like recognizing themes unless they're just like super blatant and obvious. But
do you feel like there are any in this movie that are very obvious?
I mean, the First Order / Kylo Ren theme, especially in the scene where he's in the elevator and you can tell that he's just like overflowing with anger. I love, love, love that theme. It's like such a good bad guy theme.
Are you talking about when he smashes the helmet?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's such a good one. Rey's theme, did you notice it from The Force Awakens? Like, is that, for me, Rey's theme is like one of the first ones that I walked away from being like, oh, that was like an inspired new theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember after seeing Force Awakens being like, I loved her music. Like, that, it's so different from anything else, but but I'm sure it's also pretty similar to stuff. But it, to me, it sounded so different and unique, and just the one of the reasons why I love the sequel trilogy so much is just because of Rey as a character. So I love her music.
I would agree that her music feels like it stands out to me as well, especially for Star Wars, because like the thing is, it's not like that it stands out a ton in the grand scheme of like all music, but in the language that like John Williams has built up for Star Wars, that theme, the best way that I can describe it is like, and I mean this for like all of her themes, like all three of them, like, cause they feel very related, like even though they're kind of different, it sounds to me like a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's possibly because they are so like open, like, if you think of like Luke and Leia's theme, or like Han and Leia, or Yoda's theme, they're very like, the melody is like a person walking a very meandering path, and the harmony is very like, I don't know, it's more meandering, and Rey's is more, it's a little bit more solid but open. So for those like listening who have like a little bit of a music background, it's like Rey's theme basically outlines a chord, like say A minor. And the function that it serves is that it actually leaves it kind of open to interpretation. And I don't know if this was like intentional on John Williams's part, you know, to see how Rey would develop, but it really lends itself to a lot of like theories about what other types of themes it could be derived from, or like which ones it could be leading to. Because the thing is, like, it's actually a pretty open theme that mm-hmm. can develop in a number of different ways. So it kind of just reminds me of how like Rey, you know, she was sort of like more of a blank slate when we met her, and her theme was, you know, her theme isn't aggressively like positive or like, you know, and she has like these struggles with trying to find who she is, and you know, even with some darkness. And I think her theme like beautifully lends itself to a bunch of interpretations. And so, yeah, I would agree that her theme is pretty unique for Star Wars.
Yeah. It's very kind of playful sounding. And yeah, like, especially after seeing this movie, everybody's like, okay, what is Rey's background? Who, you know, who is her family? Who is she? Who is she related to? How is her theme like anyone else's theme, and how can we connect that and form a theory? But she's just, I love the Rey nobody idea. So yeah, I like everything about her in The Last Jedi. The Rise of Skywalker Palpatine stuff, that's a whole nother episode, but
Well, the funny thing is that like Rey's theme is so open that like one could actually read Palpatine, a little bit of Palpatine's theme in it, but I do not think that is intentional. I think it's like a function of it really nicely working out because the theme was left so open. Because here's the other thing, Rey's theme is also overlays really nicely with the Force theme, and it also overlays really nicely with Luke's theme. So like the openness of her theme is what defines it, not necessarily that a part of Palpatine's theme might be in it.
Yeah.
Which, and I mean, so what her theme reminds me of is, it reminds me of Dvorak's like New World Symphony, and a lot of writing from the Romantic era that sort of was about finding new worlds and making new discoveries, and sort of Rey's theme for me follows in a legacy of exploring new territory and being bold, but like open to what may come. And yeah, she definitely is open to a lot in the course of these three movies. And I wish we would see more of her. Like, I really want to see more stuff after episode 9.
I do too. I want to see her training Finn, what that looks like.
Oh, yeah.
We got like a little taste of it in the Lego holiday special, but want more.
I would like that a lot. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's interesting. Well, this isn't in your set of minutes, but it's in the set right before and also right after. Like, when Finn is trying to sacrifice himself and he gets that like choir moment. The other time we get that choir moment is when Rey's lifting the rocks and they embrace afterward. And it's an interesting coincidental parallel that they both have their wordless choir moments, which, you know, means something big deal is happening.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, Finn. Finn's totally a future Jedi. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything about the music or sound from Star Wars or from the scene in general that we missed?
I don't think so.
Do you have any favorite themes from Star Wars in general? Any film or show?
Empire, I think, has some of my favorite music in it. Yoda's theme particularly is like, I don't know, like I always get like really emotional when I hear themes when they're blatantly obvious and I can be like, yes, that is a theme, that is a song. It really makes the experience so like overwhelming almost. And I think I have the strongest overwhelming emotional reaction to the music in Empire.
Yeah, that's a really masterful score. I mean, I love it so much too. It's been hard for me to watch the end of this film like every week so many times because I feel like the music kind of, it just pulls me all over the place, especially, you know, knowing this is Luke's final moment and then like his final scene with Carrie Fisher, his final scene with his sister before. To me, these are like really well-earned moments of reaping the benefits of sowing, I guess, the seeds of really strong musical thematic ideas. Because they work because we're already sold on them. And we've already established like an emotional connection with them from many reasons. And so then to just, you know, wield them at just the right time is like, oh, you know what you're doing.
Yeah. I think if anyone knows what they're doing, it's John Williams.
That is very true. That's very true. And this is, I think this is a great work of his, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I think that's about all I had for this set of minutes. The motifs that we heard were Luke's last stand. That's an incidental motif. Catastrophe. We heard Kylo Ren's hesitant theme. We heard the Kylo Ren / First Order menacing theme. We heard Poe's theme. We heard a bit of March of the Resistance. We heard Rey's second theme, and we heard Rey's first theme. Lots of themes. And if you're following along in the soundtrack, this is the end of The Spark. And then what comes after is not on the commercial soundtrack, but if you were lucky enough to catch a listen to the For Your Consideration version of the album, it is on there. So yeah, maybe you can find streaming links online or on YouTube or something. Molly, where can people find you online?
They can find me at Molly Damon on Twitter and Star Wars Explained on YouTube. And then if you're a fan of the Schmodown, you can find me on A Certain Point of View. We break down all the matches, not just Star Wars, And yeah, talking all about movie trivia.
Can you explain what the Schmodown is?
It's movie trivia meets wrestling.
Oh, I did not know that there was wrestling involved.
Because if you're a part of it, basically you play up your character. You can be a face or a heel, good guy, bad guy. Some of the characters have their own theme songs, for instance.
Like contestants?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, a lot of it is played up for just entertainment value. I was never really a wrestling fan growing up, but I do just love how silly it is and how the way that they've managed to make movie trivia seem like such a cool thing. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's hilarious. I actually didn't know that aspect of it. Okay. Yeah. So it's like trivia, but totally not with just serious like vibes.
Yeah. There's storylines. Every season has kind of a different story.
Like a reality show?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. I need to actually watch a match. That's funny. Anyway, thank you for joining me today, Molly. For those listening, you can find Star Wars Music Minute on YouTube and also on all the podcasting platforms. Also, the next season is going to be A New Hope. So feel free to tweet me or send me an email or something if you have any suggestions for guests or for, you know, little topics to deep dive on for that season. I'm very excited. Thank you so much for sharing the show and for the Apple Podcast reviews and all the other, the conversations are really just the greatest thing. This has been like so fun. I did not know what I was getting myself into when I started doing this in February. So yeah, 6 months and now I'm like, I can't imagine not having a Star Wars music podcast. And that'll do it. I'll see you next week on Star Wars Music Minute.